WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at danafarber.org/everywhere. WNYC Studios is supported by the Public Theater, presenting the world premiere of Jordans, a new play by Ife Olujobi about two young Black colleagues forced together and torn apart by their race, ambition, and otherworldly circumstances. Directed by Whitney White, begins April 11th. Learn more at publictheater.org.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, the Pulitzer Prize Committee didn't manage to pick a winner in the fiction category this year, but they did in poetry. And we're happy to have Brooklyn poet Tracy K. Smith, whose collection Life on Mars won the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Poetry, with us this morning. Congratulations and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
She also teaches creative writing at Princeton and gave us a great assignment for some of you this morning. Have you done yours? We've been asking you to write a brief poem in the voice of someone recently in the news. You can still submit it via Twitter or Facebook or to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show and go there and see on our comments page what a lot of others of you have submitted. There's like 50 of them up there, which is great. We'll read just a few on the air. But Tracy K. Smith, how did you find out that you won the Pulitzer? How do they tell somebody?
Well, to be honest, I haven't heard from the Pulitzer Committee at all. My husband saw the news online, and then almost immediately the phone started ringing. So.
And it seems so appropriate for you, since you're so tuned into news coverage in general, and that's what the Pulitzers are best known for, is journalism. I don't think I've ever seen a book of poetry before that cites a Rush Limbaugh caller as an inspiration for a poem, for example. Can you talk about your engagement with headlines and politics?
Yeah. Well, I feel that everything that is important or troubling to me as a person should have permission to exist in a poem. And for me, the act of writing a poem is also a way of investigating something that I know a little bit about, but not enough, or that I have a certain reaction to that seems easy, and I want to push past that.
And so we asked you to read your poem Solstice, and you've agreed, which was published last year, but could have been written yesterday.
Solstice. They're gassing geese outside of JFK. Tehran will likely fill up soon with blood. The Times is getting smaller day by day. We've learned to back away from all we say and more or less agree with what we should. Whole flocks are being gassed near JFK. So much of what we're asked is to obey, a reflex we'd abandon if we could. The Times reported 19 dead today. They're going to make the opposition pay. If you're sympathetic, knock on wood. The geese were terrorizing JFK. Remember how they taught you once to pray, eyes closed on your knees to any god? Sometimes small minds seem to take the day. Election fraud, a migratory plague, less and less surprises us as odd. We dislike what they did at JFK. Our time is brief. We dwindle by the day.
Nice. So what, you'd rather have more bird strikes and rely on more Captain Sullys?
Lots of different perspectives, I guess.
You were the first, in case people are thinking, oh, Tracy K. Smith, I know that name, but I don't know from where. You were the first NPR news poet. Because every month, starting with you in January, a poet spends a day in the newsroom and writes a poem about one of the stories. Do you like giving yourself deadlines and assignments?
Well, I give myself assignments all the time. Sometimes it's just a way of breaking the silence. Deadlines are different, and that was a really excruciating deadline because I had about 2 hours with a lot of interruptions to write a poem, but it was exciting.
What did you do it on that day?
Well, there was a story about people leaving northern Nigeria, southerners returning to the south, and that kind of provided the framework for the poem.
So here's one of the people we chose who submitted a poem taking your challenge. And this is in the voice of Mitt Romney. It comes from Wendy in Manhattan as a haiku. Ears blowing in wind, free from human disturbance. The roof is quite safe. And I guess that was actually in the voice of Mitt Romney's dog, she wrote. Another one, Richard in Westchester writes, I guess in Mitt Romney's voice, "Finally, I am it. It took so very long to prove the others wrong, but finally, I am it. Mitt."
Yeah, there's some great, great poems. I'm impressed with your listeners.
We have creativity central among our listeners, that's for sure. Your collection, Life on Mars, which is what won the prize, draws its title from the David Bowie song, Life on Mars, and he figures literally in one of the poems and has been described as kind of a view of us, this collection, from outer space in a tribute to your late father who worked on the Hubble Space Telescope.
Right. I was thinking when I first started writing these poems, I was thinking, what kind of lens could I use to think about America in this moment? And science fiction is so useful, right, to think about the present moment, but we have a certain kind of distance that the genre builds in, and that seemed interesting and helpful to me. As I worked my way further and further into the collection, I felt that the questions started getting a little bit more weighty and personal. I was thinking about my own grief and trying to figure out a way of understanding what I wanted or needed to believe.
Could you read the opening poem, The Weather in Space?
Sure. The weather in space. Is God being or pure force? The wind or what commands it? When our lives slow and we can hold all that we love, it sprawls in our laps like a gangly doll. When the storm kicks up and nothing is ours, we go chasing after all we're certain to lose, so alive. Faces radiant with panic.
Probably because I looked at your book knowing there was no Pulitzer Prize awarded for fiction, I couldn't help but smile at your line. It sounds like some novels, vast and unreadable. Of course, maybe it helps that you might have been likening those novels to God.
Right. Yeah, no, it's heartbreaking that there wasn't a fiction prize winner. You know, there are three marvelous books that are being recognized, but I think it's calling our attention to a lot of issues in publishing. And
is God more a poem or a Russian novel?
I think sometimes God is the Russian novel and sometimes a Russian doll inside of a doll. And, you know, the shape-shifting. And, of course, as I was writing this book, God for me as I grew up was a he. But, you know, in moving away from that familiar framework, I wanted to try and imagine something bigger than the container that we've, you know, some of us have been taught to fit him into, and something that might even be darker.
My guest is Brooklyn poet Tracy K. Smith, who also teaches at Princeton and has just won this year's Pulitzer Prize for poetry for her collection Life on Mars. And she has challenged you to write very short poems on our website in the voice of someone recently in the news. And the most common ones that I think that we got on the site this morning were either in the voice of Trayvon Martin or the voice of George Zimmerman.
Right.
For example, Carol from Newton, New Jersey, wrote this poem in Zimmerman's voice. "Look, it's my mission. I'm alone out there, looking out for, not over there, here, my home, neighborhood watch. Just me, alone. What do you mean? Puffed up? Hey, I volunteer. Younger, yeah, but I didn't know. Scared of me? Yeah, I had a gun. I protect people. He had a hood on, hiding his face. I can't tell you where I'm at. I need protection."
I love that one. I love the panic in the voice, you know, and the turn at the end. I think persona poems are great because they push you to sometimes get inside of a perspective that you don't admire. And I think that fosters just a more complex view of what's going on around us.
Tell us about the genre for yourself, and you'll read us one or two of what you call persona poems.
Sure. I write poems that sometimes are an attempt to get inside of something that I don't fully understand. And I think a great way of doing that is to zero in on someone else's perspective, an other, and sometimes even a distant other. And what I find is that it changes, in the best of cases, the way that I'm looking at the situation at hand. But it also forces me to create a kind of empathy with this other perspective, and that can be unsettling. And, you know, I find sometimes that we are more complicit in these acts that we despise than we'd like to admit.
And that's a very open-minded challenge to give yourself. Most people don't easily walk in the shoes of others, especially those we tend to think we are really other from.
Yeah.
So give me an example.
Okay. Well, I have a long poem in the book that is contemplates a lot of what I viewed as hate crimes that happened in 2009. There's one section in the middle that are postcards written from victims to their assailants, people who had been murdered. So I'll read you one of those. This is in the voice of Stephen Tyrone Jones, who was killed by James von Braun. You might remember he was a white supremacist who opened fire in the Holocaust Museum. Dear James, I walked the whole mall today, from the Capitol to the Lincoln Memorial. I thought I'd skip the museum altogether, but my feet wanted to go there, so I let them. I stood outside the doors trying to see in, but it was so bright my own reflection was all that shone back at me. I can choose to feel or not to feel. I realized that today. Mostly, it's just nice to move through the crowds like I used to, unnoticed. Only now, they move through me too, men, women, everyone, feeling untouched. But I've touched them. It's funny. I feel like myself. The breeze off the Potomac is calm. Sincerely, Stephen.
How creepy was it to put yourself in his shoes?
It was saddening. And I also was thinking, well, what happens? You know, these people are no longer in their lives. And so I thought maybe there's a different kind of perspective that's characterized more by compassion. And it just felt so strange and almost scary to write these poems that were almost forgiving or understanding of the assailants.
Here's another one from another listener. Sarah Rivera from Westport wrote this in the voice of Nicolas Sarkozy, who just got forced into a runoff election yesterday. When I am no longer the president of France, will the lovely Carla perform her au revoir dance? It was also haute when I stood on my votes. Please, socialists, just one more chance. And let me do this one from Frank Ortega in the voice of Eitan Pitz. I'm still 6 and a half, but I feel much older now. I walked on concrete that day in 1979. I wanted to walk to the school bus stop all by myself because I was 6 and a half. They've been digging for days in that basement in Soho. That concrete has been broken up, removed. On Prince Street, a boy can grow up to become a king. I know this because I have never stopped learning, even though I will be 6 and a half forever.
That's lovely.
Makes me want to cry. You read through some of our listener stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Here's one from Lynn Zelvin, and this is a voice in a poem in the voice of George Zimmerman. I'm so sorry about your son. I didn't know he was so young, so sad. His wings were clipped in mid-flight as he flew into the barrel of my gun.
Just like that. David Bowie isn't the only musician in your book, which takes its title from the David Bowie song Life on Mars. You also write a poem for Levon Helm and his dirt road voice, which makes the book even more elegiac after his death just last week.
Right.
Practically the same day as the Pulitzer. Can you read the last few lines from it?
Sure. This is a poem called Alternate Take. He asks, should I come in with that backbeat? And whatever those six lines were bothered by skitters off like water in hot grease. Come in, Levon, with your lips stretched tight and that pig-eyed grin, bass mallet socking it to the drum. Lay it down like you know how. Shoulders hiked nice and high, chin tipped back, so the song has to climb its way out like a man from a mine.
Did you ever meet him?
No, I never did.
You were a fan.
I was a big fan, yeah.
We noticed that Life on Mars was sold out at our neighborhood bookstore. Does the Pulitzer Prize mean something for book sales, if you don't mind discussing the business side of a poet's life?
Well, I think it does. I mean, you know, poetry has a very limited audience for most of the year. And the excitement around the Pulitzer, I think, gets people who don't normally read in the genre to take a peek. And hopefully they won't just read one book and then back away. You know, hopefully they'll be hooked.
How do you teach what you do?
I have my students read a lot of poetry, a lot of contemporary poetry, and basically they do a lot of imitations. You know, we'll break down what we read based on different elements of craft or theme, and then I'll guide them toward their own writing that asks them to try those things on for size.
Well, we will have to leave it there. A big, big thanks to Tracy K. Smith, Brooklyn's Own, for coming into our studios. Congratulations again on winning the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Poetry.
Thank you.
She teaches at Princeton, and you can celebrate National Poetry Month with Tracy and Philip Levine and other poets tonight at 7 at the Housing Works Cafe. Tonight at 7 at the Housing Works Cafe. It's free, and there's an open bar.
To the seats with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for, for she's lived it 10 times or more.